Hello and welcome. I'm Amanda Nottage, editor of Creative Head, a magazine for hairdressers and salon owners, and you're listening to The Root of It, a podcast series in partnership with Europe's largest hair and beauty booking platform, Treatwell. Now, there's nothing like a bit of sibling rivalry to spark a great debate. And this episode delivers that and more with brothers Mark and Peter McIver. You'll probably know barber Mark better as the creator and owner of Slider Cuts, based in London's Hackney. Younger sibling Peter has built up a stellar personal training business and is now the proud owner of PMAC Fitness. Both boast an impressive collective celebrity client list that includes Stormzy, Anthony Joshua, Tiny Temper and Reggie Yates, to name just a few. It's clear to hear that the McIver brothers aren't afraid to speak their minds. Let's drop in on the action.
So, Slider Cuts. Mark McIver to you. What is your first memory of our childhood?
This is not an interview.
No, I'm asking you a question. Just answer the question.
This is not an interview.
I need to know, what is your first memory of our childhood?
I don't remember. And I think because I've seen pictures, it skews your memory when you're looking at pictures. Creates false memories.
Yeah.
So I don't actually remember. I remember, obviously, that throughout your whole childhood, I was just protecting you.
Because
you had a big mouth friend. Okay. No fighting skills. So, it was always like run to Mark. You know, you remember those times, right? Obviously, you can't forget them.
Do you remember wrestling?
Wrestling, I remember, I'm still undefeated. I remember, obviously I said protecting you earlier, winning every wrestling match. You know, how did that feel?
But Cass made you tap out.
Yeah, Cass is older than me. That's not you. Cass is older than me. So Cass, Cass, our older cousin.
Yeah.
But, I've never actually thought about how it felt from your perspective of being, similar age to me, only 1 year younger than me, but always been on the losing end of things. How did that kind of feel, because I was faster than you, I was stronger than you,
You call it losing, I call it lessons.
But you're still losing up to today, that's the issue.
When me and you had our last race, I beat you.
You beat me in the last race, you did. When we had the boxing match, you won that.
Why you got such a situation for?
You won the race. Okay. It's great. You won the race. You've been training for like 15 years. So
yeah.
You won the race, definitely.
Personally, when I was growing up, I never had any dreams. Did you have any dreams?
Yeah, I wanted to be an actor. Yeah. Wanted to be loads of things. Actor, dancer, singer, MC, performer to some degree. Yeah.
The funny thing is, I used to hate Saturdays because I just had to go with you to Sylvia Young and wait outside the classroom.
Not for long though, because then Maria,
yeah,
the cousin started doing it, and then you were set free from that.
I used to hate that, but I think if we had the money, my thing would have been to play tennis.
Yeah, because you still play tennis. Well, you were still playing tennis up until recent times anyway.
Yeah, I think it was £11 an hour, wasn't it? Training?
I can't remember. I just know that even if it was £1 an hour, it would have been too much.
No, my childhood memory is all about, we can't do that. We can't afford that. We can't afford that. We can't afford that. We can't afford that.
Yeah, but look at you now. You can afford everything. you went from working. I suppose your first job was in Sainsbury's.
Sainsbury's, yes.
Yeah, you went from working Sainsbury's. How much were you getting paid an hour then?
So I made £200 a month.
Wait, how much? Wait, how much were you getting paid an hour?
I think £4 something an hour.
You think someone can get a personal training session for £4 something?
I wanted to ask my phone for that. what was your first job?
First proper job was in a factory.
Yeah.
Where I only worked 3 days there, and just loading boxes onto the vans and off the vans, and also doing stuff for like the supermarkets. I was labelling vegetables. I was weighing vegetables. I was doing all this stuff there, and I remember working like a 9-10 hour day. And I got paid like £27, and I didn't understand why. And that's why my mom, mom never actually made me share the wage, my paycheck, because it was so low. She felt sorry for me.
What did you think when I first started doing yoga?
No, I thought, you know, actually, you're really into this because you're doing 3 hours a day.
Yeah.
I was like, every day you go there for 3 hours. I thought, yeah, that's long.
Do you know what it was? Yeah, when I was doing it, yeah, it's weird how you're judged. You care so much how people perceive you when you're younger because you're doing something different. But actually, you're doing something different, and that shouldn't be labelled on anything else other than you're just doing something and no one else is doing it. I think at the time we were 23 and everyone's into football and everyone expects you to play football and everyone expects you to play a contact sport. And when you don't do something like that, they think you're not normal. You're doing something weird. But now in our 30s and everyone's injured, got back pain, knee pain, and everyone wants to jump on a yoga. Even you should jump on a yoga. You stand up 16 hours a day. Like, I would love you to stretch. Sometimes I'm like, I just want to get this guy a massage or something. Just want to click his back.
There's no time. No time. You know, you're luckily, you know, you can just work 3-4 hours a day and you're good.
You say that, but I don't work for you. Like when I first started, I do about 8 hours now. Yeah.
Well, you're lucky you get to work a normal shift, yeah. You know, and you get to train and stretch within the job that you do.
Yeah. Don't you find it weird that I've always had more money than you, but yet you've always managed to buy more than me?
I guess, you know, there's, what do you call it? I'm more risk-taking.
Yeah.
You're safe.
I'm safe. I'm safe. Obviously, I'm not safe, but like when you moved out, no one saw that coming. I thought I was going to move out before you, like 3-4 years before you. And after you moved out, you bought a house. Then after you had a wife, kids. And after, I thought, I'll be there before you.
It's the tortoise and hare, isn't it?
Tortoise and hare.
The old story, isn't it? And you should have bought a house before me. You should have bought a house like 3-4 years before I did it.
And what about now? Obviously now you're a boss in the sense of like you are physically a boss. Whereas I'm a boss because I work for myself, but you're physically a boss. You've got staff. You've got a family. Like, you got the full boss package.
Yeah, but being a boss is, I'm not going to say it's overrated, but when you're a boss and you have all these other people around under you and they look up to you, it's just kind of like you have to deal with everybody's temperaments and everybody's issues and everybody's feelings, you know. So I always tell people, like, being a boss is great for the things that everybody knows, but no one seems to know the cons of being a boss and all the things you take on, even with you're working for yourself. You know, people are just like, I'm taking a sick day. And it's like, you know, if you take a sick day, you don't get paid. Being a boss is a great thing. You just got to know what comes with it. So I wouldn't trade it. I wouldn't be like, oh, I'm not going to be a boss now because of the cons, because there's amazing things about it. I love the fact of providing people jobs. I love the fact that, you know, not only providing people jobs, there's people who work for me who, you know, you're buying a place, you've got married, you're doing this, you bought your first car or whatever it is. And that's because of the job I provided. I love the fact that I've got all of these visions that I can actually not even play out. I can actually implement into a business, because when I was working in someone else's premises, I had all these things which I wanted to do and I couldn't because it's not my premises. So being a boss, you know, you get to kind of like more so live out your dreams and kind of like make those dreams into reality. So it's actually amazing. And you do get to move things around. You know, if I have to come on a podcast or I'm going away, I get to move my own schedule and I don't have to rely on someone else to tell me whether I can or I can't.
When you were leaving DNLs, I could see that you were just frustrated with so much going on there. You just wanted to get out of there and just wanted to do things your way. Not naming any names, but obviously there are people who come in late, come doing this, and there were days where you would like, you probably cutting up other clients because other people just weren't turning up for work.
Well, yeah, that those things, you know, which is what kind of led me to wanting my own business so I could, you know, implement rules, like, you know, so you have to show up at this time, you have to do this, you have to do that, because ultimately where I was working before, everybody was their own boss, so they could technically do what they wanted, but I wanted to run a shop slightly different to that. And that's why, you know, it put me in a position to, you know, achieve and move to being my own boss. And that has been one of my, you know, success stories, you know, getting my own barbershop, as well as other things, you know. But that's been one of my success stories where I'm like, you know what, I've done this thing and it worked out. And look now, you know, it's grown from one barber, which was me, in the shop the first week. And now we've got like 9 barbers in there, 2 receptionists, three young runners, two assistants, a publicist. You know, I've got like a team of like maybe about 18, 19 people. So for me, that's a real success story, especially through my career. What would you say some of your successes would be then?
Mine is quite like silly, but it's, you know, because we couldn't afford stuff, and like going to Chicken Express in Kentish Town was like a big deal to us. Yeah. My biggest success story is basically going to a restaurant and not having to care how much the food costs.
Well, I guess I'm not at that success yet. I guess I'm not there yet.
But if anyone would understand, you will understand it better than anyone. Remember, we ate rice every single day. And after, like, Chicken Express was a big deal to us. So when I go to a restaurant now and not have to care about what the food costs, it sounds, to the outside people, but it sounds as one of my biggest successes, because it's so small but yet so significant in my life.
I guess if I go Dixie Chicken, I don't have to worry about the price. But
and obviously, like, if you want to talk about material things, like buying my first house and buying my second house, that was massive. And on potential buying my third house, that's like to go to come from the council set up to having two homes now, potentially three. For me, it just shows that it doesn't matter what career you take or where you go, if you're just consistent at it, do the right things, don't blow your money on rubbish, you can physically have whatever you want. I haven't reached the stage of you of married and kids, you know, have had a few past issues.
It's because you focus on everything. You focus on other things while you were out in the club, living your life. I was settled. I had a settled mindset, so I was looking for love. Yeah, but in all the right places.
Yeah, but you say that, but like I had a good time. I had a great time in the club. I had a great time in Vegas. I had a great time in Ibiza. I've had a great time, and after, I don't think I could have settled down before 30. Because saying that, I know that now, 99% would have been one of those guys who just went out there cheated all the time. So I had to get out of my system for me to now say, cool, do you know what? I'm ready to settle down and have my kids and finally give mummy a grandchild from somebody else other than you.
Well, yeah. You got to know your own pace in life. You can't live for someone else. You can't live on someone else's schedule.
Yeah. Who was your first biggest client?
Richard Blackwood. Don't even have to think about it.
Yeah.
Richard Blackwood. I was like 19 years old, which makes that about, how long ago now? Wow. About
15.
Mass. How was it? What were you now?
16 years.
Yeah, no, 16 years ago.
Yeah.
So that's about 16 years ago. I was still in college. I was finishing college. And I remember he came in to cut with one of the other barbers, Frankie or Damon, and they weren't here. And I told him to come back tomorrow. He said, no, you can just do it. And I was like, no. I was trying to convince him to come back tomorrow because I was scared to do his hair. Yeah. And he just kept saying, no, trust me, you can do it. And he let me cut his hair. Well, he didn't let me cut his hair. He kind of forced me to cut his hair because I was trying not to cut his hair. And came out all right. And he was happy. He tipped me. And he was cool. And he was good as well because he was like, I remember there was a girl in my class who was a massive fan of Richard Blackwood. Not a girl I was interested in any way, but she was just a massive fan. And I remember I said, oh, if I call her, will you speak to her? And he's like, yeah, sure. And he spoke to her on the phone. And she got excited and she was excited and all that stuff there. And yeah, he was my first, you know, celebrity client.
The funny thing about him is, like, I remember him because of MTV. He used to do that MTV thing in Camden.
You gotta go.
Yeah, MTV in Camden.
You gotta go.
And he was at one point at the stage where he was, like, couldn't walk down the street famous.
Yeah, he was massive.
Yeah.
He back then, he was, Richard Blackwood was massive.
Doesn't it make you laugh that a lot of these people who are famous now or back then, if they had Instagram then, they would be so massive because of Instagram now, they make people more famous than what they need to be.
I wouldn't say what they need to be, but yeah, they're bigger than, you know, your trajectory of how far and how big, you know, how
your reach,
of how widely known you are, yeah, goes a lot further now. You know, Richard Blackwood, if there was Instagram back then, would have clean over 10 million followers,
yeah,
on Instagram.
Yeah. Mine was, my first client was actually Spoonie.
Spoonie, yeah. Are you going to say it?
Because, and the funny thing about Spoonie is, yeah, do you know when we first played football with him, yeah, I was so gassed because I've seen Spoonie on the flyers from day, dream team here, dream team there. And after, when he said to me, yeah, cool, whatever, let's train. And you can't, from the outside, you think that celebrities, you have to convince them to do stuff. But they're actually just normal people just willing to help. And Spoonie was one guy. Like, till this day, I always tell him, listen, like, you changed my perspective on things and how I approach things.
I guess it's, what do you call it? With even with celebrities, there are people who, by nature, you are a nice person or you're not.
Yeah.
So, you know, Spoonie is just that type of person. Full stop. That's his character. So, you know, whether he's a celebrity or not, he's going to be that generous kind of nice guy who's always offering a helping hand. So that's why I just feel like, you know, the ones which maybe aren't nice people to some degree, they just always want that type of person.
Yeah.
And then you went on to do everyone else. You know, you've done stuff with Anthony Joshua. You've done stuff with.
Yeah. You've done stuff with Reggie, Marvin.
You're like best friends with Marvin now. Marvin Humes.
Do you know what it was? Yeah, like with Reggie and Marvin, it's weird because you train them at first. Then after you realise that they actually like you. And you expect them to be something, obviously, like, not like you, but then you have everything in common. And you just get along. And it became, oh, so what are you up to today? Blah, blah. Then after that, it just became natural.
Yeah.
So, could you and Reggie are close.
Yeah, you're probably closer to Reggie than me, though.
Right now, but in general, you are.
We have different kind of, like, relationship, you could say.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're like the, hey, let's have some fun type of friend. And I'm kind of like, you know, we would have some serious conversations.
Yeah.
You know? And it's a balance. Everyone needs everything in life. Different things, you know. And barbering is typically known as the therapist chair anyway. So
yeah.
You're training someone, so it should be a bit more boisterous and more fun. Even though there's that aspect in barbering, but with what you're doing, it should be a bit more of that anyway.
So who is your biggest influence client that you've ever had?
The biggest influential client, LeBron James.
Yeah, and the funny thing about it, when you cut him, I remember we cut him, like, I didn't realise how big he was. Did you realise how big he was at the time?
I realised how big he was because everyone's always saying his name, but I didn't realise from a personal perspective of how big he was because I wasn't really into basketball.
Yeah.
So I've always heard his name.
Yeah.
But I didn't know.
Yeah.
I didn't know. The funny thing is, the career you've gone into to the career I've gone into are all to do with image.
Yeah.
Changing someone's image. It's funny because it's, we've gone into this luxury place because, you know, to be fair, your industry is far from luxury because you're actually dealing with people's health as well as image, although most people do it because of image. Would you say that?
Yeah, but do you know, you say that, but you don't care about your health until something happens. And a lot of people don't really care about their health until something else. They all care about right now about their image. And I think when you get to about 40, 50, to start caring about, you know what, I need to start making better decisions with my drinking or my eating. And I need to start thinking about everything that goes into my system because that has an effect on how I wake up, how I sleep, and my energy. Current expectations is right now I'm at a place where I'm so confident I can reach a client's target based on the information. Just because I've done it before. So I always, like before, if I was a new PT, I'll be like, I can train you in 1 month, give you a 6-pack in 1 month, and have you looking great in 1 month. And I realize that's good for the client to hear, but if you don't achieve that 1 month, then you've basically lost it. And one thing I always tell clients, I can't guarantee you how you're going to be outside these sessions. So I always put it back onto them. Because I can give you the best 1 hour of your day, but what are you going to do for the next 23 hours? How are you going to eat? How are you going to work? Are you going to sit down on a couch and slouch over? So I always try and tell clients this. I can be the best trainer in the world, give you the best diet, best everything in the world, but if you don't put the work in, nothing is going to work. And I learned that a long, long time ago. Because I obviously see a lot of people, yeah, you've been 6 weeks, 8 weeks. No one can guarantee you results if you don't put the work in.
The work outside of the session.
Yeah. But with you, obviously, it's easier because you say,
it's not easier. It's not easier. It's not easier at all. Like, I think it's actually worse with what I do because people expect a miracle. Whereas with you, the quote-unquote miracle that they're expecting or hoping for, you can give them if they do everything you tell them to do.
Yeah.
As for me, the issue with it is I've had people come who are basically almost like, no offense to them, are almost like bald, thin and everywhere. And they're expecting me because of things they've seen or because of things they've created in their head that I can bring that back and make them look like, you know, I don't know, make them look like Carlton from Fresh Prince,
yeah.
You know, with, you know, but so that's why it's hard for me because I have all these people which are seeing, let's say, if we were to rate it from 1 to 10 as example, they're seeing work that is at a level, let's just say 7, but in their heads, it looks like level 15. Because
yeah.
Now, because of their insecurities and the things that are going on with them, so their expectations are just heightened and they're expecting, yes, if I go to him, he can do this and he will do that. And if I can't, to be fair, I've been lucky because I haven't had any like real complaints, but I'm always fearful over people's expectations that aren't real because they're just seeing things. And also, some people come in and it's like, you've got this type of hair or you haven't got this type of hair, and you show me a picture of something you want, and I'm like, literally, it's impossible unless we do like the man weave, which is now a new thing. Unless we do the man weave, this is impossible to get. But sometimes they just think you're a miracle worker.
Do you think sometimes, yeah, people look at expectations and say, do you know what, if they can get that haircut, I can get that haircut because, you know, I look the same skin tone as him. I have the same height as him. My hair is better than them, so he can obviously cut my hair better than that.
That would make sense if people were actually using those things where, like, we've got the same skin tone, we've got the same hair texture.
Yeah.
But people, you'd see someone come in and it's kind of like the picture they show you, which is funny because I'm about to do a skit on it for my Instagram, where the picture they show you is totally different from who they are. Mm-hmm. Like, you see this guy and it could be either way. It could be someone who is white with European straight hair to someone who's black with, you know, very Afro-y hair, very curly hair. And they show you a picture of, let's say, the other person. And like, can I get this haircut?
Yeah.
And it's just like, first of all, you can technically get the haircut he has got, but it's not going to look anything like this. And then it's like, also, when you were scrolling through Instagram, did you not see any pictures of people that kind of look like you and have similar hair textures to you to find a picture? So, yeah, people's expectations are hard. And I guess what's influencing them is, I don't know. I can't even see what's even influencing them. I'm about to say Instagram and Facebook and, you know, social media. But I guess it is, to be fair, it is. And that's what's influencing them. They are looking at all of these things on Instagram. They're seeing some transformations and they don't know what goes into that transformation. So for hair, as example, some of these transformations which they want, they can have. If they're willing to do, let's say, like the man weave, or if they're willing to put dye in their hair or hair fibers and different things like that, they can have that transformation. But there are people who don't want those things but want that transformation. So it's like, but you are aware the picture you showed me of this person and this transformation has had that.
How come I've never, ever had a choice of haircut?
You do have a choice of haircut. You wanted the skin fade.
everyone walked into the shop and said, yeah, I want that P Mac fade.
No, that's not. I guess you're not an influencer yet. Okay. I think you need a few more followers.
no one wants a P Mac fade. Okay.
Nobody wants to be. They want an Anthony Joshua fade.
Okay.
They want a Tiny Temper fade.
Okay,
they want a Reggie Yates fade.
Yeah, everyone wants a Reggie fade,
isn't it? They don't want a P Mac fitness fade.
The funny thing about him is weird because, when it comes to fashion, your fashion.
Like Reggie.
When it comes to fashion, your fashion is dead.
My fashion is amazing.
Your fashion is dead. Like, all you do is, like you have, no, even your wife says it's dead.
You know the difference is?
Yeah.
You guys are spending your energy and time on looking at, oh, what's the new trousers?
What's the new shoes?
What's the new shirt? This and that. And all this energy you're spending,
yeah,
you could spend that on your career. So when you say to me, how have I built up this empire, it's because I'm not worried about what trousers to wear today.
No.
My wardrobe's simple. Everything's there. I've got 12 pairs of black trousers, all the same. I have got 10 to 30, you know, T-shirts, all Slider Cuts black T-shirts, right? And now, especially, I've got my Slider Cuts jumpers and my Slider Cuts jackets. Yes, that's all I wear. To work, on dates, to church, everywhere. But it means I don't have to think to myself, what am I wearing today?
Do you know what I remember living when we were younger? And we share bed or so a bedroom. Like, your clothes used to be everywhere. It used to annoy me so much. And now, like, why couldn't you have been like that when we were younger?
Yeah, like, well, wearing the same thing.
Like, yeah.
Because I cared about fashion back then. Like, I don't care about fashion now. I had time on my hands to think about fashion.
Yeah, because obviously, like, my fashion is like 10 out of 10, you know.
Well, you're rating yourself, which is kind of like a little bit arrogant.
what has mommy ever said? Always say.
I'm saying you're rating yourself. It's best to hear it from someone else. That's all I'm saying.
She always said that. Make sure you're great. Be great.
Maybe I should have told you what your fashion is. You know, because maybe that would have been received well. You know, yeah. You're telling yourself. You know.
So basically, question for you right now. What would be, you're going out today, what would be your outfit right now?
What would be my outfit right now? Yeah. Where am I going to?
You're going to wear a shirt.
Why am I even asking you? Doesn't matter. I'm going to wear a Sadakot t-shirt. The trousers are on now. And depending on where we go to, could depend on, you know, what, you know, whether I wear my boots or trainers.
Are you not into Air Force Ones anymore?
No, I don't even have trainers. Like, I have Palladium boots. I have the trainers, which I got free from that shoot I done.
Yeah.
And I think that's really about it. And I've got some, the funny thing is, the other day, someone gave me, what are they called again? The boutons, the thing with the red bottoms on them, right?
The boutons. That's how bad you are in fashion.
Yeah, someone gave me a pair of them, right? And they're actually expensive, because when I bought them into the barbershop, because I was coming past the barbershop, people went online and said, oh, these boots cost like $2,600, like, and someone gave them to me.
Yeah.
And I was like, but I can't wear these boots. They've got all these spikes on them. There's just too much going on.
Yeah.
So I gave them away.
You know those Alexander McQueens?
Yeah.
I just think they're Stan Smiths. Just expensive Stan Smiths.
Name makes it, innit?
Yeah. What is your trademark haircut?
It's going to be a skin fade, depending on what level on top, but it's going to be a skin fade. That is the haircut I do the most. Yeah. I do more skin fade than anything else. And it goes from whether it's a wave level or it's a curl king level. So, you know, people either want it wavy, you know, which a lot of times they are looking at Reggie's haircut,
yeah,
and, you know, saying they want that haircut. Or it's curled, you know, curl king on the top, which is gone from Tiny's haircut, which was very popular like about 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But it ranges between that. So those are probably my haircuts, which I'd say are my favorite kind of haircuts. Although, they're my most popular haircuts, but I am in a moment trying to really branch out and do a lot more to do with patterns and all these different things like that.
Do you remember when I was younger? Yeah, do you remember everyone used to have the cat scratch?
Yep.
Yeah, the cat scratch was my favorite. And even the cuts and eyebrows.
Yep.
That's still a thing now. That's totally gone.
People don't really get cuts and eyebrows no more. Yeah. And people don't get cat scratches at all no more. It's more of a rare thing.
But I see footballers or something like that. Pogba, he goes crazy in his haircuts.
Because that's back to fashion, isn't it?
Yeah.
They're all into kind of like,
I'm first.
You know,
first.
I think, you know, with people which are on TV, like, especially when it comes to footballers, they want to be different. They want something that stands out.
Yeah.
So they'll, you know, they might do cat scratches and patterns and those different things and dye their hair in one part, you know, because they want to experiment. And the job they do allows them to do that as well.
Yeah.
And that's what's in. That's kind of one thing that's actually in right now. With younger people, they are dyeing their hair, they are twisting their hair. Yeah, that's the in thing, especially these kids, you know, are dyeing and twisting. You know, it's all the influence from the rappers in America, I'd say, because they've all got either some type of braid or kind of like locks or faux locks, because I think they're all doing extensions in their hair. That's why, you know, one day someone's got a mini afro, the next day they've got long locks.
If you are... had to give yourself advice, the Mark, the 14-year-old, the guy with the S curls and the nose pierce, what advice would you give yourself?
I would probably tell myself to continue on the road which I'm going on and say that it's going to be a lonely road, because it is, but continue following the path that you want to go on, because ultimately that's what brought me here.
Yeah.
But the difference is mentally it was hard because it felt lonely, not following the crowd and doing what everyone else was doing. So I'll just give him encouragement to say, you know, continue doing that. And I'll probably say, you know, also that apply yourself a bit more, because I didn't start fully applying myself till I was 17. And I'd say, you know, you're going to get there eventually, but, you know, if you do that from now, you can get further quicker.
Yeah.
What would you tell yourself? Don't be your 14-year-old self. Give me your 16-year-old self.
do you know what? Like, I would tell myself to spend more money quicker.
Wow. Okay.
Because I believe I could have had much more if I spent money quicker. Because we came from nothing, I was trying to hold on to money, and having 10 grand in your bank account and 20 grand in your bank account just felt better than actually having stuff, like having or buying a house. Just spend more. And just basically understand that all this struggle you're going through is perfect practice for when you're 30, because I see people at 30 who never struggled before, and they really struggle when they start struggling at 30. They just don't know how to struggle. They don't know how to go through it. So I'll tell myself to spend more earlier.
I'll give you some advice.
What?
Watch your mouth. That'll be my advice to your 16-year-old self.
Yeah, but what about yourself now? Watch your mouth.
You've been enjoying Listen to What the Man Said, Series 1 of The Root of It. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, head on over to creativeheadmag.com for more podcast goodness.